Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at openhouseonline.com.au.
Well, you know, to meet Janine Kabbala for the first time, you'd never imagine that her story would contain some pretty dark chapters. I mean, today she's vibrant, she's happy, she's confident, she's a wife, she's a mum, she's an author, she's a world-travelling preacher. But the road she took to get here is a rocky one indeed. It's included abuse, depression, eating disorders, getting caught up in drug cartels in Central America and everything else in between. The story has a happy ending, and Janine's in the studio to have a chat about it. Hello, Janine.
Hello.
It's quite a story, isn't it?
It is.
It's often afterwards when you look back and you go, was that really me?
It's so true. It's only when I look back and I think, yeah, that seems like it didn't happen, but it actually was my life.
It's all your life, yeah. Yeah. Let's start in the church. I mean, you actually grew up in the church, didn't you?
I did.
Yeah.
So that was my upbringing, always believing in God and going to quite a traditional church. So I've never doubted the reality of God.
And your whole family were Christians, were they? Or
church-going
people?
Church-goers.
Yeah. So from your early childhood, you're growing up in the church. Then there is unfortunately a negative experience in the church.
Yes, when I was younger, about 8 years old, I was sexually abused at a Christian children's camp. And then later on, when I was a leader in a youth group, when I was about 19, the youth pastor was arrested because he'd been sexually abusing the boys in the youth group. Mm. And that pretty much was the final straw in my eyes about the value of Christianity and did I want to be involved in something like that.
Indeed, as it would be. So you're 8 years old when this event happened against you. Mm-hmm. You kept on going to church with your family, I guess?
Yeah, I was a child.
You
and
went along.
It was the family rule that you live under my roof, you go to church.
Yeah, okay. How many years between that and then the youth pastor getting arrested?
About 11.
Okay, so it's a long time still.
Yeah.
I mean, how did you feel as a child going along to church after that event for 11 years afterwards?
You don't have sophisticated language as a child, but I felt that it was hypocritical and I was quite cynical about it all. Mm. I always wanted to know what the truth was. And I guess I just really began to question the value of Christianity and the hypocrisy that I had witnessed.
And experienced. So, what, 11 years old? You're 19 years old then when the youth pastor was arrested. Mm-hmm. By that stage, you're an adult. And I guess what, you just said, right, blow this.
Yeah, I did. I could never deny God, but I couldn't accept him in the way that he'd been presented to me as a child and throughout my upbringing. I thought that cannot be who God is. Mm. So I turned my back on church, and I would always say that I loved God. It was just Christians I couldn't stand. And I did explore lots of other religions and became involved in Buddhism, and I became involved with the Hare Krishnas for a while. Mm-hmm. But nothing really resonated as truth in my spirit.
See, how many people could probably resonate with what you've just said and say they've had some sort of bad experience, may not be as bad as what you've had, but they've had some sort of bad experience and they don't let go of God. And so they kind of go towards the, you know, Buddhism, Hinduism, or whatever it might be, some of the New Age practices, because, you know, I still want to have some sort of connection with this other out there somehow. And this seems all a lot more friendly and a lot more peaceful or a lot more safe.
Absolutely. God is real, and every person, we're all created in his image and likeness, and deep down we all know that he's real. And I think that it's exactly as you've said. People have the Christian presentation of God, which is truth, but distorted sometimes through our humanity. And so they search for him in other ways. And for example, with the Hare Krishnas, what I really loved was that they believed God was whoever you wanted him to be, and you could access him in whatever way you wanted to access him. And that really was attractive to me because I had been so hurt, and I thought, you know what, as long as you're not hurting anyone else, why do we need to be so uptight and exclusive about this? You know, why can't you find God in whatever way you want to?
Mm-hmm. It's a safe, something you can actually control. It's safe, yeah. But not necessarily something that can change your life. Janine Kabbala is with us, and we're just hearing her story. So, Janine, you then kind of hit the road, don't you? You go traveling.
Yeah, I grew up in quite a small town, and I always thought there's got to be something more. And so I traveled a lot. And on my travels, I'd finished studying. I'd studied in America at the University of Miami in Florida. And I'd finished studying, I thought it would be a good idea to travel. So I bought a one-way ticket to Caracas in Venezuela. My plan was to hitchhike through Central America and Mexico back to the United States.
Mm-hmm.
So all that's right. What I did.
Okay. How long was that for?
That was for about 4 months.
Mm-hmm. So you get yourself in some interesting situations during that 4 months.
Yes, it's not exactly the safest place to travel. And my family, I didn't really keep in touch. My dad, I had a big argument with him before I left. He didn't want me to go, so I just stopped communicating with them. And I had very limited funds, and the plan was hitchhiking through some of the most dangerous nations on Earth.
How old are you when you're doing this?
21.
Fairly adventurous.
Yeah, at the time, I thought I knew everything, but, you know, looking back, I was the most clueless person in the world.
Oh dear. So you start making friends over there, in Venezuela, I take it.
No, in Costa Rica.
In Costa Rica, yeah.
So I was in a place called Puerto Viejo. It's on the Pacific coast, close to the border with Nicaragua, and I was only ever going to pass through. But I met a couple of guys. They were Canadians and they seemed really nice. And they said I could stay with them if I helped paint their cabins. And that seemed like a good idea. It was a really beautiful, idyllic place.
Mm-hmm.
They had these cabins about 5 kilometers away from the village, right on the beach. And they seemed like nice people. So I stayed with them.
Mm-hmm. Nice people that happened to be involved in drug cartels.
Yes, yes. So it became obvious from the get-go that they were using a lot of drugs, but I didn't really understand the magnitude of it. And along the way through conversations, it became apparent that one of the guys was wanted on drug charges in Canada and the US. Another guy wanted to go home, but he couldn't because he was wanted on drug charges. So I was thinking, oh, you know, maybe you're not as nice as I thought that you were, but I still was very naive and clueless.
Mm.
And then it became apparent that they were not just using lots of drugs, but they were actually dealing drugs.
Mm-hmm. Okay, then you got started getting caught up in that. You never used drugs yourself, did you?
No, I didn't.
But you got caught up in a deal.
I did. I had started a little business baking muffins because I needed to make some muffins. I mean, some money.
Some people need to make muffins too.
I didn't need to make muffins. I needed to make money. Yeah. So I did that and I had to buy flour one day. So I went into the village and one of the guys came along with me to buy the flour. And then he said, why don't you come with me? I need to see someone about something. So I went with him and it was a drug deal. And I didn't realize going in. But as soon as I went into this guy's house, I knew immediately that something wasn't right. And he wanted me to drink, it looked like a glass of liquor. And I just refused because at the time, you know, I was anorexic. I refused to ingest anything containing calories. So I was like, back off, unless that's water or Diet Coke, I will not drink that. And he was quite persistent, but I wouldn't drink it. But I could feel the tension rising in the room.
What do you think it was? I mean, did you think it was something to drug you?
Well, I think in hindsight, I think it probably was. Mm. It was obviously liquor, like maybe he just wanted to get me drunk. I don't know. Maybe he was just being friendly, but looking back, I don't think that that was the case. But the conversation between Dan, my friend, and the guy he was doing the drug deal with became more and more animated and heated, and Dan just grabbed me and pulled me out of the chair and said, Janine, run, you've got to get out of here. So I'm running through the village. I was running into the jungle. I missed there was a pathway that took us back to our cabin, and I missed that pathway, and I was running through this thick Costa Rican jungle, and Dan, my friend, ran up to me. He had 2 1-kilo bags of cocaine, and he said to me, here, Janine, hold this. So I'm carrying a bag of cocaine. He said, you know, if the police catch us, it would just be better if we had half each.
Mm.
I didn't even know I was going to a drug deal.
Mm.
But I was like, all right, I'll carry that bag of cocaine. And he said to me, you know, that guy had wanted to buy you. He was one of the major suppliers of drugs out of Nicaragua, but women into Nicaragua. And he had thought I would make a good candidate for one of the generals in the Nicaraguan army. And as far-fetched as that sounds, that was reality. That's what happened. And Dan was like, but don't worry, I told him I wouldn't sell you. Like he was some kind of hero. Yeah, so I guess that for me, that was one of the defining moments of how did I get here? Mm. Like a good little girl growing up in a Christian family in church, and here I am in the Costa Rican jungle. Nobody knows where I am. I'm carrying a bag of cocaine, and there's a drug dealer who wants to buy me and sell me to a Nicaraguan general. Like it sounds like some kind of movie plot. And I just remember thinking, how did I get here? How did my life come to this?
Now let's pause there for a moment. How many people could also say, you get to a point in life, you go, how did I get here?
Absolutely.
Was this really what I wanted? Was this what I was dreaming as I was a child?
Absolutely. I think everyone has those moments.
Open House is what you're listening to. Janine Kabbalah's story we're hearing. So you escaped that situation. So you're running through. By the way, what happened to the drugs? I mean, you know, you're running through the jungle and you're holding this 1 kilo of cocaine. What happened then?
So we went back to the cabins and Dan just had the drugs. I gave them back to him. But the next day I knew I can't stay here. There were some other incidents that had happened previously, and I thought, you know, just because they've done this and that and they're drug dealers, it doesn't mean they're bad people. You know, I'm just going to stay here. But then that was like, I thought, okay, I have to leave. So I flew from Costa Rica to Cancun in Mexico just to get away from all of that. And in Cancun, which you may, if you Google it, you know, you'll see beautiful images of white sand and turquoise beaches. It's a real paradise location people go for holidays. But there, I just realized I was depressed. I was lonely. I hated myself. You know, I'd spent my life thinking it's everybody else's fault that I feel this way or that I'm behaving this way. People abused me or they didn't treat me right. It was everyone else's fault. But in Cancun, I realized though, didn't matter where I went, the one common theme in my life was me. And that was the reason I was so messed up and broken, because it was me, not everybody else.
You got to take responsibility at some stage for your life, even if somebody else has actually, you know, left a thumbprint on you.
It's true.
Yeah. So eventually you come back to Australia.
That's right.
Yeah. Shortly after that? After Mexico?
About 2 weeks later.
Okay. And then you get yourself a whole bunch of degrees?
Yes. So I had one degree. I had a business degree. Then I got a master's degree in international studies. And I was really focused on my career, very driven, because I was just trying to fill something inside myself and validate myself. And I thought, money and career success, and maybe that would fill the hole.
You mentioned before that you didn't want to drink that little glass of whatever it was, you know, because you were suffering from anorexia at the time as well. That was something that continued for a while, wasn't it? There was anorexia, bulimia, self-harm.
That's right, yeah. Depression, all the fun stuff.
Could any of that have gone back to the experiences in the church back then? Have you been able to kind of whittle it way down to an origin somewhere?
I think everyone's looking to fill something inside them, you know, the space that only God can fill. And for different people, it's different things. For me, it was perfectionism. And if I can just have my life controlled and perfect, and if I can look a certain way, then maybe this hole will be filled. I think looking at my family, my father, when I was young, suffered anorexia. He was admitted to a psychiatric hospital and he had attempted suicide on a number of occasions. And I think, oh, you know, I can attach what I went through to that or to abuse. You know, I don't know. But I think certainly those things would have contributed.
Yes.
But they were my choices.
Yes, yes. Wow, okay. So that paints a little bit of a picture of the actual background. Then what? 14 years ago, you have a dream.
I had a dream. I was so messed up. I had attempted suicide a number of times, but in my worldview, I lacked the courage to follow through. Like I could never go through with it.
Was that because of the anorexia and the bulimia?
Yeah, it was too painful to be alive in my head, and I despised myself. And I just thought, you know what, I know what I need. I need to go to church. I need to meet God. And I spent a couple of months where I would try to go to church. and I would get ready. But as soon as I would go to leave my house to get to a church service, the bombardment would start in my head of, you are so fat, you're so disgusting. If you leave the house, everyone's going to see how fat you are. Mm. The whole world is going to look at how fat you are. And so I couldn't leave the house.
How many kilos were you at that stage, by the way?
Well, I'm 6 feet tall and I was 57 kgs.
Okay. Hardly fat.
But it's just the way that you see yourself.
That's the whole thing, isn't it? It is actually a psychological issue as much as it's a physical thing.
That's right.
Yeah. So you couldn't get to church?
No.
So church, God came to you.
It's true. The word of God is the truth. And it says in God's word that if you seek God, that you're going to find him. And it doesn't matter how messed up you are, God is true to his word. And just because I couldn't get to church, the place that I thought I would find God, God was still true to his word and he came and he found me. Mm. And that's where the dream came in.
Which I'm saying, you know, God came to you. Actually, as you tell a story, it wasn't quite as direct as that or quite as simple as that. Just describe the dream.
Well, I had a dream that I was having a chat with Satan, and it was very similar to this chat right now, like just...
Oh, thank you.
Not that you're wearing a red suit or anything, but Satan wasn't a scary horror movie guy. Hmm. And I think that's just something that throws people off. When Satan comes to you, he's not going to be the scary guy. He's going to be the guy that tells you everything you want to hear. And he was so empathetic. I'd never felt so understood. Wow. I knew immediately who he was. He was distant and cold, but he wasn't mean or frightening. And he said to me, Janine, you're messed up. The reason that your mind is so tormented is because you're sitting on the fence. Your whole life you have known about God. And let's not kid each other. We both know that God is real. And Janine, in order for you to get any peace in your mind, you need to get down off the fence and decide once and for all who it is you're going to live for. And that is some very good advice from the Prince of Darkness right there.
It certainly is. It's surprising, actually.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing. You know, we think of Satan as a liar, and he is a liar, but the Bible calls him a deceiver. And the difference between a deception and a lie is that a deception always contains an element of truth. Hmm. And that's the bait. It's the hook that ensnares you. So once he spoke out those words that resonated as complete truth to my heart, he had my attention and he had me exactly where he wanted me.
Okay. So what happens then?
So he said, you know what, Janine, that information that you've had about God hasn't brought you any peace, hasn't made you happy. I'm asking you to live for me. And if you do, I can guarantee that you will be wealthy, you will be successful in your career. And Janine, you've got to know that I am more than happy for you to keep that eating disorder. You will never be fat. Hmm. So I was like, bingo, sold, everything I wanted right there. And I said yes to Satan and asked him to come into my heart.
In the dream.
In the dream.
And then?
And then I woke myself up screaming out the name Jesus. I just was aware of everything that had happened in that dream, and I just knew instinctively what I needed to do to make it right. I got on my knees and I prayed and I asked Jesus to come into my heart and to forgive me. And then I went back to sleep.
Did you? Yeah.
I did.
Softly?
Yeah, I was.
Sweetly?
That's the thing. I'd just given my heart to Satan, but I called out on the name of Jesus one time. I didn't beg or plead or repeat it over and over again. I just said his name one time, and immediately I just felt peace come into my room, and I knew that when I asked him to forgive me that he had. But when I woke up in the morning, I knew everything has to change, because this is not about religion. It's not about an intellectual acknowledgement that God is real. It isn't some kind of spiritual experience. This has got to change every part of my life. So I left my job. I broke up with my boyfriend. I moved cities. And I just thought, I have to make this real in every place of my world. I went to church and I had lots of issues with church, but I made myself go. I read my Bible and I prayed.
Yeah.
And God changed my life.
Janine Kabbala is with us. So today she's an author and a preacher. She's a wife and a mum. But what a story it is as to how she actually has kind of gotten to that, I guess, that wholeness now. This is Open House right across the nation. So you have this dream. You wake up in the morning and you know that your life has changed. You know that then you need to follow up on, act on that. And so you do all these changes. And by the way, isn't that an important thing? We can kind of be a bit lazy in this in some regard. Okay, I'm going to give my life to Jesus. I'm going to, you know, follow God from this point on. Right, God, now fix me up, heal me. Give me a good job, the job you want to be. Actually, there's some things that we need to do. I mean, you actually made some radical changes. There was a relationship that had to break up because obviously you felt it wasn't going the same direction as you needed to go. You actually changed cities, you actually changed jobs and a number of those things. I've seen in the people that really have been used by God, it's been actually that degree of surrender, actually, that actually has been part of the story before then the real wholeness comes and then the real change comes and then after that the real kind of impact that life actually kind of has on other people too. What happened from that point on? At some stage you met your now husband.
I did. I was on holidays in New Zealand. My husband is a Kiwi and I met him and I'd been a Christian for a year when I met him and I had been going to a church that was quite small. It was Balmain Christian Life Center, and it was just what I needed, about 50 people, but it doesn't exist anymore. It's part of the city campus at Hillsong. And so I met Andrew and I moved to New Zealand. He was a youth pastor. I guess for me, the year that I was a Christian in Australia and I could control my world and had a little group of people around me, that was really safe. And then I met Andrew and we got married and not only did he go to church, but he was a pastor. And that really did my head in. I didn't really think about it. I just thought, oh, you know, you're really handsome. You look good in your jeans. I think I'll marry you. I didn't realize what I was doing and it really made my world spin out because there was an expectation of me. I'm married to the youth pastor. Suddenly I'm a youth pastor too. That was never in my worldview. I didn't want to be involved in ministry. I'd only been a Christian for 18 months. And so the things in my world began to spiral out of control. Eating and depression, it got really messy.
Things don't always just overnight when you become a Christian suddenly fix up, do they?
No, not at all.
And actually, you actually were hospitalized in the end, weren't you?
I was injuring myself and I was so depressed and I just knew I couldn't live like that anymore because previously when I wasn't a Christian, I wanted to die, but now I didn't want to die anymore, but I was doing things where I thought someone's going to find me in my house dead, the things I'm doing to myself. And my husband is amazing and it was breaking my heart seeing him have to journey through this with me. I thought, I cannot continue to live like this. I need to get some help. So I was admitted to a psychiatric hospital. And I was told that because it had been 10 years that I had battled eating disorders and depression. And I was told by a lovely doctor who had the best intentions, but that I could never be cured. But the best thing they could offer me was medication and some behavioral techniques to control my symptoms, but I couldn't be cured.
So how did or how is the healing happening? I mean, I'm assuming that things are better now, but I don't know. I mean, where are you up to now today?
I feel healed. I guess it's probably been 4 or 5 years where I feel, okay, I'm healed. I'm free of this. I don't think I can ever take for granted that I wouldn't be vulnerable in those areas, yes, considered my life experience. But I feel like I'm free, like it doesn't consume my head space anymore and it's not my natural behavior anymore.
Mm-hmm. Now, what led to that? One back a couple of years then. What then started to become the change for you, which obviously the medical professions weren't kind of thinking, you know, was going to be a possibility for you? What started the positive path?
I had been on so many altar calls where I was just crying out to God, you need to heal me, like take this away from me. I don't want this darkness. I don't want to go home and do these things anymore. heal me now. And nothing would ever happen. And I was so angry with God and so hurt. Like, why are you rejecting me like this? Like, why won't you answer my prayer? I'd heard about people and they were smoking and they needed to quit and God intervened, or they were addicted to drugs and God intervened. They walked out of a wheelchair. Like, God, why can't you do that for me? And then one altar call, you know, I was a pathetic mess. And I think probably there's nothing wrong with going out on every altar call and getting every opportunity to get prayer and to seek God, because that's where I heard God say to me, Janine, I healed you ages ago. You just need to live like it now. Like, you've been healed ever since you were a Christian. Just make some different choices. Mm-hmm. Live differently. So for me, I then went back and thought, okay, then, what has Jesus done for me? And I realized when I looked at Jesus' life, you know, there were things that he implemented in his world, because he came to earth and lived in a human body. And how did he live? What did he do that enabled him to be free in his life as a person? And so I looked and I saw the choices that he made. He deferred to the word of God. He didn't just live according to his feelings and emotions or what he could understand in his head. Yeah. I saw that he had boundaries in his life. He said, you know, if your hand causes you to sin, cut it off. If your eye causes you to sin, gouge it out. That's pretty extreme. But I knew there were things. I had been a vegan. I had all these food rules that weren't necessarily wrong. There's nothing wrong with being a vegetarian or a vegan, but for me, I had all these control things with food. I needed to get rid of them. I needed to be accountable. And the main thing I saw in Jesus' life was forgiveness. He refused to hold on to offenses. And even one of the last things he said on the cross was, God, please forgive them. They don't know what they're doing. So I looked at all of those areas in my life and made some adjustments. And it wasn't overnight, but eventually, so we're talking years, it became easier and easier until I realized, oh my gosh, you know, my life is different. I'm happy. That's my default position, is happiness now.
Yes. Beautiful story. Beautiful story. And so many things that can be pulled out of it. Number one is just some of those principles you've just laid out there, that there is power in the Bible and holding to it rather than your own feelings and your own thoughts, just alone. The fact that there was stuff in your life you had to get rid of and change, be accountable for, and also pursuing God in the midst of God's supposed no, you know, or silence, continuing to just continue to pursue God. Thanks for telling us your story, Janine. Really appreciate it.
You're welcome. It's been a pleasure.
Yeah, I really trust that it's touched a lot of lives. Janine Kabbalah there. Kabbalah Ministries is the ministry that her and her husband actually run these days. Kabbalah, that's with a U, K-U-B-A-L-A.
We hope you enjoyed this Open House podcast. Thanks to Christian Super and Real World Technology. To hear more from Open House, visit openhouseonline.com.au.